Welcome to Canadian Politique. I'm Cameron Bishop.
I'm Leanne Goodman.
And I'm Mike McDougall.
Welcome back to Mike, who unfortunately last week was voiceless, and Leanne, who is on the mend, we hope, after MRI for her hip. Mike, welcome to the show again.
Thanks. I wish I was here last week when you guys were so wrong about your takes on cyberbullying.
Well, let's talk about cyberbullying then. Let's let you get your punches in on Leanne and I. So you're actually in favor of racist diatribes against immigrants.
That is absurd. That is as absurd as you being in favor of going back to the Middle Ages and putting people on the rack in the town square. When I heard that, I was driving my car and I was like, fine, I'll listen to you guys, even though I'm not on the pod. I'll listen anyways. I hate listened because I knew you guys were gonna go there. So I'm listening to it in the car driving down in Toronto, and I hear you basically try to use the analogy that, you know, it's no different than racking them in the town square, and you were kind of saying like, see, it worked then. And I'm like, I was yelling in my car, I'm like, have you ever heard of the Renaissance, you dumb anyways. I was pretty that was an interesting take. That was a hot take, Cameron. A very hot take.
I put them in the stocks. He had them in the stocks.
Put them in the stocks.
Yeah, so yelling, he's game.
But Mike, you're wearing like a free Kelly Polka t-shirt, are you?
I am not. What I'm saying is that we live in a society that has laws, and should she be charged with a hate crime? Yeah, I think she should. And that's why we have a developed society and a developed justice system that will take care of that. It's not up to, you know, Bob in Newmarket's like opinion on Twitter and releasing her home address and bombarding her employer. That's not our job as members of society. And I think that to stoop to that level of to basically, you know, be like an internet vigilante makes our society a worse place. And I think that our society has developed rules, and it has, you know, the police are going to take care of it if the police have to take care of it. So I don't think it's our job to be calling her house, calling her employer. That's not our job as members of society.
Well, I didn't call her employer.
Fuck the police. Oh. Hey, Mike, this is an excellent segue, though, because you were talking about Bob on Twitter, who's a lunatic and angry, and we were going to talk about the commenters on our Facebook page, I believe.
Oh, my God.
Possibly
what the hell?
Bob, listen, from Twitter.
Listen, if you're listening to this podcast and you think that it's a good idea to go on Twitter and just, you know, talk about, like, lock her up and make America great again, just fucking don't, okay? Like, just don't.
What about coming on to our Facebook page?
God, we have so many conservative trolls, and you know none of them have actually listened to the interview with Andrea Horvath that I did on Saturday, or pretty much anything. They're just reflexively toxic, and I've banned a few of them. Robert Brown, Dale, your friend Dale there, Mike.
Dale, man. I liked Dale because he's the smartest, most well-read guy in the world, but he couldn't really form a sentence. So I stand by my statement that I've never met a smart Dale.
or a good-looking Keith.
I'm not going to judge people's looks.
Come on, Keith Partridge.
Okay, well.
Oh, you guys don't even know who Keith Partridge is. That's how young you are.
Neither do anyway, you. You're 25.
On. That's true.
But I thought, you know, it was quite illustrative. I will say I love the traffic on the Facebook page, but it's the amount of vitriol being spewed by people who claim to be Ford supporters or what have you, and I have no doubt that they are. Everything about from Andrea Horvath being a crook to Kathleen Wynne being on the take to whatever the case may be. I mean, it was just this past weekend has just been a litany of bile tossed out by the alt-righters and the nutters on our Facebook page. And I don't know. I enjoy the traffic. I don't enjoy, however, you know, blatant racism. I think, Mike, if you went after the Sanctuary City proposal or just, you know, randomly deciding that politicians that you disagree with are crooks.
Well, I brought this up too. I said, like, you're just following a Trump doctrine. He's like, I didn't mention Trump. I'm like, yeah, when you call a woman politician a crook, all you're doing is just repeating what you heard on Fox News. Like, stop it. And this whole thing about the Sanctuary City, I got so mad last night. I'm walking my dog and I'm furiously typing on Twitter, into Facebook, because this, like, some of these people, not all these people are trolls. Some of these people actually, like, this is how they think. They heard somewhere that the NDP wants to offer sanctuary city status. Basically what they're saying is it doesn't matter about, like, if you're documented or not, if you need life-saving medical attention, we're going to give it to you. And so by saying that you're against that, you're saying that you want to let people die because they don't have a visa. And that is just, like, it goes back to the, you know, Cameron wanting to put people in the stocks. Like, that's not who we are as a society.
Well, listen, I would put Kelly Polka in the stocks any day, and some of the nutters too that are supporting Doug Ford. You, however, would probably hold the camera and say, Kelly, let her rip and rant. But
Cameron from Ottawa on Facebook is really
But the thing is, and I know this from my work at the Conversation Canada, because whenever we do a Jordan Peterson story, oh my God, they all come out, the nutters come out. It's the people who are the angriest that can be bothered to comment, right? Agreed. So I don't think they represent any sort of majority. They're just the people who are the bitterest and the most pissed off in the world and are blaming other people and immigrants and, right? They're angry people. It's only angry people who would bother. Like, so I never worry too much about them, right? And it's like, okay, if this is how you're getting out your rage, go for it. But I know that the majority of people probably don't think that way and just don't bother commenting because they've read something and they're like, oh yeah, that's interesting, and move along. They don't sit stewing about it because it somehow threatens their intelligence, which is part of it, honestly, and threatens their, you know, place in the world. They're not mean, petty, small, frightened people, which really a lot of the really angry people, that's what it stems from. Anger usually stems from fear. Fear of losing your place in the world. So I never worry about it too much. Suck it up, losers. That's my attitude.
Yeah, it's funny. I'm looking at this woman, her comment yesterday, I guess it was, or a couple days ago. Her name's Pamela Vecchio. Nobody tracked down. I do not want people tracking down her place of business or her home. She claims to be an American and says that she would have voted for Donald Trump and probably did. And she said that in response, she says, tax the ones who have worked very hard for what they earn. So let's tax business until they have to close down. Where is the tax money going to come from? We're all going to be poor if this Liberal NDP keeps spending beyond their means. You know what's funny, Pamela? Enjoy your lack of health care and your failing social safety net, such as it is down in the United States. And anybody that agrees with that, they want tax cuts, but then they're pissed off that there's gaps in the healthcare system, or pissed off that they can't find childcare for their kids, or pissed off that they can't get a deduction on their mortgage or whatever the case may be, or that their kid has a shitty education. They don't want to pay anything, but they want the best services ever. I don't know what you call them, ass backwards
like
socialists.
The anti Obamacare Tea Party people who were screaming about not taking away my Medicare.
Yeah.
Hello? Anybody home? I don't like when people on the left or progressives or whoever they are suggest that their opponents are stupid. But when you do look, the Pew Research Center has done a big deep dive on the high school education level, the education levels of the typical Republican voters. And I know there's lots of moderate, very intelligent, very successful Republican voters, don't get me wrong, but they do tend to attract more high school dropouts by far than the Democratic Party. They've convinced them that the Democratic Party is evil. And it happens up here too. You know, people have been convinced, especially in Western Canada, that the Liberals are evil.
Yep.
And that, you know, it's silly.
I think the moral of the story is, if I wanted to see a bunch of racist idiots on Facebook, I could just click on the people I went to high school with.
Oh. Wow. And that, folks, is what we call a generalization. I was going to just add a point about the sanctuary city stuff, and that is that we are a signatory. Canada is a signatory to the UN Convention on Refugees. These are not illegal immigrants that are coming in here. These are not evil people. I think we had a show a couple weeks ago where we talked about it, and fewer than 1% of the individuals who are quote unquote illegal, the ones scaring the piss out of the Ford Nation, they are not criminals. Fewer than 1% are criminals, rather. not the 99.9% that are coming in. So put it in perspective, but we have a responsibility because we're signatories to what's called an international convention. I know these folks would like to embrace isolationism and forget our responsibility as global citizens, but it doesn't work that way. And we have a rich country with good systems of government and good social safety nets. And I would much rather those individuals come here and get a chance to get ahead, a fair path to citizenship and contribute to society than to be thrown out on the margin or deported back to the country where they face complete ruin.
That's right.
All right.
Well, put her in the stocks, whoever that woman is. What was her name? Pamela?
Pamela Vecchio.
Get her in the stocks.
Yes. The people on the Facebook page who need to go in the town square include Robert Brown, from wherever you're from, Pamela Vecchio, Trump supporter. I believe Dale from wherever the hell Dale was from. Is there anybody else that needs to be tried and sentenced right here today?
Put them in the stocks. We'll start yelling shame at them. Did you guys ever see Game of Thrones when Cersei has to walk down the path in the city? People are throwing shit at her and yelling shame. Maybe we could do that to Pam and Dale. Pam, Dale, and Bob.
Yeah. Like the Pam, Dale, and Bob. That's right. Okay, good. Let's talk about our 21st prime minister, who's decided that he's got something to say. He's back. So you remember him. His name is Stephen Joseph Harper, and his ass was booted out of government in October 2015 after 10 years of anger. And also just complete and abject misery, mostly for anybody that had to work for him and had to look at him on TV, those icy blue eyes. In the last few weeks, though, he's speaking out about the issues that he really cares about. He's praised Donald Trump's decision to snub European allies and can the Iran nuclear deal. He's congratulated Hungary's far-right authoritarian Prime Minister Viktor Orban on his reelection. He's bragged. This is a good one. And please, conservatives, if you're listening, please let this happen. Make this happen. He's bragged that he could still be conservative leader if he wanted to be. And of course, because he claims to be an evangelical Christian with the love of Jesus coursing through his veins, you know, he's got the love of Jesus down, down, down in his heart. He's applauded widely the decision by the Trump administration to open the U.S. embassy in Jerusalem. What gives? Is Stephen Harper fixing to replace younger Stephen Harper, a.k.a. Andrew Scheer?
He might be, right? Why is he doing this?
Because he goes to bed every night remembering the fact that it was Pierre Trudeau's son who kicked his ass in 2015.
I still think one of my favorite images of all time is Stephen Harper folded into the back of that minivan. Do you remember the pitch I'm talking about when he left office? They took him in a minivan, like from the residence to the airport. And there was a cameraman outside the airport, and they took a picture of him trying to get out. And like, because he's pretty big, right? Like Stephen Harper's like over 6 feet tall. And so he was trying to fold himself out of the back seat of like a Honda Odyssey. See, it was the funniest picture. I don't know. We'll put it on our Facebook page later. It's pretty awesome.
Well, he was the man, of course, who had his own limo flown over to India at the cost of $1 million to taxpayers when he was there on an official visit. And he used to love big motorcades and fancy security apparatuses to protect him as he moved through the streets of Ottawa. And of course, this is also the man that famously hid inside a closet when a terrorist ran and shot up Parliament. He hid in a closet. That was the bravery of strongman Stephen Harper.
Wow. You guys are not Harper fans. I'm going to tell you something that will surprise you as much as your love of Bush, and I mean the family, surprises me. I didn't hate Stephen Harper, but I came to Ottawa and started covering him after I'd been for 5-6 years in D.C. covering the rise of the Tea Party, where like elected Republican officials, respected people, were questioning whether Obama was really born in Hawaii and his birth certificate, and is he Kenyan and is he a Muslim. So to me, to come up to Canada, it seems so much more civilized, even though I understand that he is an automaton with absolutely no personality. But what I find interesting about his re-entry into the political sphere, and I don't mind that, by the way. So what? He got voted out, but he was prime minister for how many years? Eight? How many years was it?
Nine and a bit.
Right. if they want to come back and shoot their mouths off, that's fine. I respected George W. for not doing it to Obama, but I think Obama was a different situation. He was the first African-American president, and I think it would have been shitty to do it, and W. did too, apparently, even though Cheney did it all the time. But Pierre Trudeau used to do it to Joe Clark and then whoever.
And Mulroney.
Well, then, yeah, Mulroney, I guess it was, because Joe Clark was so short-lived, and then Pierre came back. But in any event, if he wants to do it, fine. But what I find curious is he's suddenly praising Trump for the Iran deal. How come he's never said a single goddamn thing about the fact that Trump has been in the pocket of the Russians? Nobody hates Putin and the Russians more than Harper.
Yeah.
Like, nobody.
Yeah. Get out of Ukraine.
Right?
Yeah.
And he's cherry picking where he's choosing to praise Trump and going completely silent in areas where I think, like, I actually wanted to hear from Stephen Harper when all this stuff about Russia was coming out. This is a guy who hates Putin. He's got a boner for Israel. He's got a big boner for Israel and a big boner for Ukraine. I don't really understand why. I think we tried to figure out at one point when I was at CT.
He loves potato latkes and pierogies. That's the commonality there.
I think he read Exodus as a child and decided that, you know, that Leon Uris book and really felt for the Israel. Anyway, I don't know what it's about with the boner for Israel, but I was in the room when him and his rock band performed for Benjamin Netanyahu and his wife in, I guess it was Jerusalem. And I got to tell you, I've never felt such secondhand embarrassment in my life as I felt that night.
You weren't in the room though when Trudeau was wearing a sari in India. So
no, I wasn't, and that would have been the same type of thing. But honestly, it was a long tail woman in a black dress. It was so bad, and I really
don't. You remember when Harper invited Nickelback to come and pose with him on the front step of 24 Sussex? The miracle there is not that he invited Nickelback, who everybody hates, is that the fact that the house didn't collapse behind them, because that place is such a rat-infested, mold-infested shithole.
Right.
But I thought it was interesting
to get fixed up.
The interesting.
I find him interesting. I don't like him at all, but I found him an interesting character, and so it doesn't really bother me that he's weighing in. I just wish he'd stop cherry picking and just, like, if you're going to weigh in, you got to explain how you can possibly reconcile yourself with the fact that Trump has relied on the Russians to get elected and you hate the Russians.
Because anyway, Harper has always been, I mean, Harper is a hypocrite. That's the reality. Harper is a hypocrite. He turned his back on the Reform Party roots that he claimed to embrace. And frankly, stronger conservatism that he claimed to be when he was stronger conservatism that he claimed to endorse when he was a backbench MP who went off in a snit for 4 years between 97 and when he came back to lead the then Canadian Alliance. He's always been a hypocrite, but I thought that the Globe and Mail editorial was really good about this. And it says, and I'm just going to read this little clip about why he's speaking out. It says, Mr. Harper has little to show for the past decade in power. His failure to act boldly then, to follow his instincts as a conservative, bothers him. To compensate for his incredible shrinking legacy, he embraces with the impunity of a former politician an uncompromising moral clarity. As prime minister, he avoided the conservative social agenda on abortion, gay marriage, and capital punishment. He rejected country building. No pipelines or big projects, no abolition of the Senate, no electoral reform or strengthening of Canada's economic union. The monarchy which he lionized is no more popular in Canada than it was today. The Conservatives muzzled scientists and canceled the long-form census. The Liberals reversed both. Ministers and diplomats can talk again. Ottawa's memorial to the victims of communism, having been moved and made smaller, is less memorable. The court challenges program, canceled by Mr. Harper, has been reinstated. His anti-terrorism bill will be amended. The Supreme Court has struck down his laws on minimum sentencing for drug offenders. I think the most surprising legacy of Stephen Harper is how easily erased his legacy is. And now I just wish he would erase himself from public commentary, because nobody wants to hear a man who's slapping authoritarians like Viktor Orban from Hungary, who has essentially, you know, undermine the electoral system, you know, completely stack the judiciary in his favor, rewritten the country's constitution to benefit him. And there's Harper slapping him on the back with a big congratulation and then giving a circle jerk to you know, Donald Trump, who's never cracked a fucking book in his life on busting up an Iran nuclear deal when he was in office, when that very deal, Harper was in office when that deal was struck. And that's another thing that the Globe says. 3 years ago, he did not talk that way about Iran. Yes, he called an Iran a terrorist state, but he would not break with the United States over Iran in the same way that Prime Minister Justin Trudeau, who supports the agreement, is muted today because of Canada's delicate negotiations with the United States over NAFTA. Harper, just like Trudeau in this case, they know where their bread is buttered, so they won't do anything. So it's really, this is the moral clarity of Stephen Harper, folks. It's always about saying something after the fact when everybody has long past moved on and you've hoped that they've forgotten what the fuck you said that you stood for in the first place.
Okay. Yeah.
And?
All his whole thing really was about holding on to power. He didn't pursue all sorts of social conservative stuff, even if he might have believed it, and who knows if he ever did believe it, who knows, because he knew it wouldn't get him reelected. So he's always been about holding on to power, and I'm sure, like exactly what you said, it probably kills him to see that Pierre Trudeau's kid is in there, and he's just trying to take his switch. I don't get where he gets the whole thing that he could still be leader of the party, however.
Oh, he probably could be. He probably could be.
No, the knives are really out for him, right? They wanted him gone.
Well, they wanted him gone after he lost, but I think if Andrew Scheer is any indication, they would probably happily take him back. If Scheer gets his ass kicked in 2019, which I'm pretty sure is no sure thing at this point, but if he were to, I almost wonder if Harper's laying the groundwork for a comeback, which I would not be surprised, because remember, Trudeau went and took his walk in the snow, and granted, he was back within months, and he didn't actually fully resign. He was still interim leader when they asked him to come back when the government of Joe Clark fell. I would not be surprised if Stephen Harper thinks that there's an act two for him. I'd love that, because the contrast would be wonderful. And he's too arrogant to realize that inserting himself in the public dialogue right now, which is what he's doing, actually plays into the Liberal hand. I don't know if you've seen Question Period, but they keep talking about the fact that the Conservatives are Harper's party. They're still Harper's party. They reject climate change. You know, they're against investments in Canadians, all of this kind of stuff. Still Harper's party, and who comes up? Good old alumni Stephen Harper. I don't know.
Interesting.
But I will say, Leanne, you made a good point. His whole point of being in office was, I think, summed up well in Paul Wells's book. He wrote a book called The Longer I'm Prime Minister about Stephen Harper. And that's what it was always about. It wasn't about the country. It wasn't about the party. It wasn't about anything. It was about Stephen Harper and how long he could hold on to the brass ring. And unfortunately for us, that was 9.5 years of lost opportunity and lost investment and big deficits. I don't know where the Conservatives get off crowing about their economic management when they pissed away a $13 billion deficit, rang up $150 billion in debt. A $13 billion surplus that they pissed away, that the Liberals left them in 2006. They ran up $150 billion worth of debt. They failed to invest really in infrastructure. Their economic action plan was garbage. They pitted people against each other. They didn't take action on the environment. They didn't, you know, invest, you know, greatly in nation building. We're trying to make the country as a whole stronger. It was just this petty finger pointing and anger. They were angrier in government than they are in opposition, which is quite an achievement.
He was in a great band, though. I don't know if you ever heard them. They were really good. And then it turned out the drummer was a pedophile. Remember that? Anyway, we should move on. We could talk about him all day.
And Mike, you didn't say anything. Yeah, the drummer. Mike, you didn't say anything, though, about Stephen Harper.
You know, I just don't. How do I say this without I'm following it? But at the end of the day, I kind of echo Lu Yan's comments at the beginning where he, you know, this isn't uncommon. I think that Stephen Harper left as a very unpopular prime minister. He probably got a bad rap because a lot of people like to pile on, and like the creepy stare did it for me. And I know that shouldn't be what does it. But at the end of the day, you know, if he wants to give his opinion, that's fine. I mean, you can't take away his 10 years of experience, and the Liberals that are in power right now don't really make it much easy. They don't make it easy on themselves to, you know, avoid criticism. And to be fair to Harper, he probably could have jumped on a lot earlier than he has. Let him do his thing. He might be angling for speaking gigs. Who knows? Let him be him. And if he wants to faction the Conservative Party by saying he could probably be leader, then let him do it. That's fine. It only helps Liberals and NDP for Stephen Harper to be sticking his nose into the Conservative Party that's trying to unite right now. And obviously he doesn't want that to happen. So let him get in his minivan, let him drive around Ottawa, let him say what he wants to say, and that's fine.
I will say this. I mean, I remember after 2006 when Prime Minister Martin was no longer Prime Minister, and I remember seeing him in the Ottawa airport, and I remember thinking it was like the saddest thing, and that was he's coming down the stairs. There is no RCMP officer there. Actually, that's not true. There was one RCMP officer there. I was going to say no RCMP detail. There was one RCMP officer with him, and he's carrying this like garment bag over his shoulder and, you know, some like plastic bag in his hand. And he just looked so just sad. But I say that with sympathy to Paul Martin. But for some reason, it kind of tickles me when I think about Stephen Harper having to do the exact same thing.
So I've got a very similar Paul Martin story where I was in the airport in Toronto and he was ahead of me in the security line and I had to ask him to please move his bins forward so I could get my empty plastic bin on the conveyor belt. There was lots of room and he's like, and he said, sorry. He's like, oh, I'm sorry. And he moved his bins forward and I put mine down and I was like, dude.
It's like watching Joe Clark be frisked at the airport, which was such an indignity to this poor man. And after I walked through, like they're like, sorry, sir, we're just going to have to do a check over you. And I said to the security guard after, I'm like, do you know who that man is? And they're like, no. I was like, that's Joe Clark. He was the prime minister. And they're like, oh. And they looked really embarrassed. I'm thinking probably not half as much as Joe Clark as they were like touching his ass and in between his legs to make sure he didn't have something.
Well, there's a sad photo out there, too, of after Obama beat Romney in the presidential election, someone snapped a photo of Mitt Romney sitting in coach on an airplane, and he just had this sheepish look on his face, and I was just like, oh, man.
Although, okay, well, now we're really getting off on a tangent, but the Romney just refused as soon as he lost any sort of special treatment, which kind of made me like that about him. Like, that was his call.
That's your Jesus.
I like John McCain, too, after he lost as well. They're good losers.
They are good losers. Whereas Trump's just a bad loser in every conceivable way.
He won and he's a bad loser.
I will say one last piece that I have to say about Harper just because it pisses me off. Not only did he live in 24 Sussex for 9.5 years and refuse any sort of capital upgrade. So now we're ticking upwards to millions and multiple millions of dollars. I think it's around $10 million just to bring that place up to code. He had like cats and chinchillas everywhere. So not only is it filled with mold and asbestos, but it probably stinks of cat piss. Thank you very much, Stephen and Lorene Harper.
I'm sure they had cleaners come in, man. I mean, I think you're being really unfair.
I don't know. Cat pee gets into the boards. And well, that's what my mom always says. Have you ever smelled cat pee? I'm not anti-kitty.
I think you're being anti-kitty right now. You kiddiest.
Damn you, Cheddar Harper, and damn your urine spray all over 24 Sussex. It's helped to ruin a dumpy official residence. Okay, let's move on.
Damn you, Cheddar Harper. Okay, yeah, let's move on.
It's episode title, maybe?
Damn you, Cheddar Harper. I like it. Okay, let's talk about something that is actually... he used everything as a scratching post. On Monday.
Piss everywhere.
There's piss everywhere. There is, you know, tender victuals littered through the pipes. It's just an absolute disaster.
F you, Cheddar Harper.
Yeah, exactly. Euthanasia for cats, in the case of Cheddar Harper, would be too nice.
Have you guys heard about Israel?
Yes, let's go back there. Okay, on a serious note.
Let's sober up now.
On Monday, the Trump administration opened the new U.S. embassy in Jerusalem, moving it from Tel Aviv to the delight of U.S. evangelicals and the hard-right Israeli government of Benjamin Netanyahu. But of course, infuriating the Palestinians, not to mention foreign policy experts and governments around the world who are concerned that such a move not only upsets the delicate balance needed to achieve peace in the region in favor of a strong pro-Israel approach that alienates Palestinians and others in the area that are needed to ensure stability in this critical part of the world. And of course, who was on hand to open the embassy but complicit enabler Ivanka Trump, a noted nepotism beneficiary, neither a diplomat, a scholar, or a secretary of state, Ivanka Trump declaring the embassy open. The New York Daily News mocked Ivanka's smiling idiocy on the front page of their paper with the headline, Daddy's Little Ghoul. And here's why. Over 55 Palestinian protesters, including 8 children under the age of 16, were killed, and over 2,400 people wounded at the Gaza border by Israeli forces as the embassy was being declared open by this simpleton, Ivanka Trump, whose only qualification, I might add, was that she was genetically released from the tip of Donald Trump's penis. So,
jeez.
Let's just play the clip.
It's now my great honor to call upon Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin and Senior Advisor Ivanka Trump to respectively unveil the seal of the United States Embassy and to read the dedication.
On behalf of the 45th President of the United States of America, we welcome you officially and for the first time to the Embassy of the United States here in Jerusalem, the capital of Israel. Thank you.
As I said in December, our greatest hope is for peace. The United States remains fully committed to facilitating a lasting peace agreement.
While presidents before him have backed down from their pledge to move the American embassy once in office, this president delivered. Because when President Trump makes a promise, he keeps it.
The truth is that Jerusalem has been and will always be the capital of the Jewish people, the capital of the Jewish state. May the opening of this embassy in this city spread the truth far and wide, and may the truth advance a lasting peace between Israel and all our neighbors. God bless the United States of America, and God bless Jerusalem.
Yeah. Meanwhile, scores of people are being gunned down across the Gaza Strip border as these assholes are sitting there clapping and applauding themselves. CNN contributor and Trump biographer Mike D'Antonio said in an op-ed that, quote, Ivanka's smile was undoubtedly offered to calm concerns about him, meaning Trump, and perhaps to distract from the mayhem and death that any thoughtful person could have anticipated as the embassy opened and Trump abandoned America's claim to honest broker status in the Middle East. What a Monday.
Yeah, it was brutal.
It was brutal. And I mean, the whole U.S. embassy moving to Jerusalem, that's something that, you know, back in 1995, the U.S. Congress did pass an act saying that the embassy should move to Jerusalem. But since 95, every president, so you have, you know, Clinton, you got Bush and you got Obama, they all basically in their campaign promises said, yeah, we'll do it. But then they didn't. Right. And they didn't because they were given security briefings that said that this could really incite the area. So they've all kind of deferred it. So Trump's whole argument on this is, well, I'm a decider. And when I say I'm going to do something, I'm not going to defer it. So I want to steal like Colbert. I don't know if you guys remember when Colbert did the White House Correspondents' Dinner, and he said about George W. Bush was he believes on Wednesday what he believed on Monday, no matter what happens on Tuesday. That's what he said about Bush. And we know that that's a joke, and it isn't true because Bush didn't move the embassy. But Trump does have access to security briefings and information that would have given him, you know, I can't imagine that Trump is smarter than Bush, Obama, and Clinton. So, you know, we have to look here and think, like, we know this guy doesn't read security briefings, and he just did it because he loves the adoration from Israel, and he loves the fact that it's an easy way to pander to what he sees as his base, who don't understand anything about this conflict. And moving the embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem is just irresponsible, and there was no need to do it now. It wasn't a burning issue. Nobody was thinking about it until Trump decided that it had to be done.
That's absolutely true.
Yeah, pleasing Jared, giving through. Jared was behind it, obviously. He's Orthodox. And there's this weird theory, though, that the reason that the evangelicals like Trump so much, and I'm not a religious person, and I've never read the Bible, so I don't know the genesis of it, was because he's going to bring them his... It will result... Getting Jerusalem back as the capital will... bring Jesus back or some crazy thing.
It's the rapture. That's what it is.
Yeah, the rapture and all that shit.
Yeah.
And they don't care that he is evil, and because they're supposed to have the Antichrist in there first, that means they're getting closer to the rapture. It's all this weird shit. Like, really, people?
Well, look at...
played into his decision, too. He wants to hold on to those people, those voters. He doesn't have many, but honest to God.
Yeah, so that's the whole point. Like, the evangelical Christian movement, and I of which I was unfortunate enough to have grown up when my mom and my then-stepfather were together in the Alliance Church, which was, and he used to preach, not preach, I guess, he used to lead what was called cell groups. But he used to lead cell group where he would basically suggest that the rapture was imminent, forthcoming. I don't know, maybe it is, maybe it isn't. Beam me up if it is. But they believe, the evangelical community believes fundamentally, that all these things have to take place in order for Christ to return and for the world to enter,
including
what's
called a dick like Trump being in power, like including an immoral, evil fucker like Trump. That's why they've been forgiving of Trump's transgressions, apparently, which is like, what?
That's right.
Okay.
Well, it is ironic, Leanne, because I know that we talked about this briefly, but one of the guys who was praying at the opening was a pastor named Robert Jeffress. And Robert Jeffress once accused then President Barack Obama of, quote, paving the way for the Antichrist. Which is quite funny, because if you actually look at it, the only person that is anti-Christ in terms of his entire disposition and outlook on the world, on people, on the way he behaves, and is completely different than anything related to of the love of Christ or the forgiveness of Christ, would be Donald Trump. So I suppose in that respect, if paving the way for the Antichrist by Barack Obama led to Donald Trump, then I suppose Pastor Jeffress might just be right. I find it very troubling. You know, I don't know how they can square these folks in this administration, if they're so bound and determined to pursue the agenda of the far right, religious right. I just don't understand how they honestly believe themselves to be honest brokers in the peace process. Like, is this just a complete and utter fallacy? Like, do they believe this shit?
Or they don't care.
Yeah, or they don't care.
I don't. It's just so alien and foreign to me. I can't even get my head around how you could believe this shit.
Yeah, like, I'm with
it's
you.
It's just how they operate, though, right? Like, they're just not. They don't pay attention. Like, this whole, I mean, I was listening to another podcast where they talked about how the official release of Jared Kushner's remarks, apparently they left out some flippant comments that he made that were really, really pro-Israel. And they were just kind of saying, like, no other administration would be allowed to leave out comments on an official record because it's supposed to be an official record, right? So this administration just doesn't care.
They don't
or
care.
They don't know what they're doing.
Facts matter. What is it that alternative facts, that's what they embrace. But of course they do so to the benefit of the folks in their base who believe anything, any slop that's served up into their troughs for them to lap up, doesn't matter what's going on in the rest of the world. They see these bunch of dead Muslim kids or Muslim protesters, and they think, you know what? Whatever. He's doing God's will. Yeah, how that is doing God's will is beyond me. Violence, bloodshed, murder, death, that is not God's will at all. And if Agreed. Opening an embassy is what turns your cranks, and if you're opening the Bible and looking at a story about Jonah who swallowed a whale, a whale who swallowed Jonah and taking it literally, maybe the problem isn't Muslim protesters. Maybe it's you. If you actually believe that everything in the Bible is literal, if you actually believe that a guy like Donald Trump, who has absolutely no credibility, no intelligence, is an arrogant fuck, pardon my language, but an arrogant fuck who hasn't seen the inside of the church, if ever, before he decided that he was going to pander to the base. If that's your idea of a savior, wow, I have a real problem with that.
Preach it.
All right, let's talk stories of the week.
Okay.
Leanne, you get to go first.
Okay, well, you know, the thing that has been striking me lately is all this reference to Doug Ford being, you know, Canada's Donald Trump. It's a little evidence of how smug we can be as Canadians. Like, populism has been in Canada for a long, long time, right?
Yep.
He's not taken a page from Donald Trump's book. I mean, there was the Social Credit Party of Alberta. They were totally populist. Preston Manning, his brother. So I hate when, I think it makes us feel superior when we suggest that this wave is swept up to Canada as a result of Donald Trump. No, it's been here for as long as Canada has been a country. So maybe let's stop talking about Doug Ford being Canada's Donald Trump. I really don't think he is.
I don't think he is either. But you know, why do we always have to measure ourselves against what the United States is doing?
That's a good point.
Why is it so important to us to feel superior to what the U.S. is doing? That's what drives me nuts. Like, we pretend that we're not as racist. We are. We pretend that, you know, no, nothing like Donald Trump could ever happen here. It could, and it has. So that's my little rant.
No, I think it's a fair rant. I really do think it's a fair rant, because at the end of the day, you know, we pat ourselves on the back way too often when we shouldn't, but we're not even creative enough to come up with our own, you know, populist crap. We have to crib it poorly off of what goes on in the United States. Even some asshole at a Doug Ford rally this past week yelling "lock her up" about Kathleen Wynne.
I know.
Really? Come on. Come
on.
You
know, and Kelly Leach and Kevin O'Leary definitely did try to borrow a, you know, his playbook, but it was dumb. It got them nowhere, and they didn't need to do it because we have our own big problem with populism in this country, and we always have. And let's not pretend that it's an American thing.
Yeah, and I don't particularly think Doug Ford is a racist either. I think that he could be supported by individuals that may qualify themselves as racist, but I do not believe that he himself is a racist. He may be, you know, he may have a different approach than I would like to embrace, but I do not believe that he is a racist. But his supporters obviously find comfort there.
You may be right. I believe there's some weird issues with women, even though he's got a wife and five daughters. He says some weird shit, but he talks down to women a bit, which I hate.
Yeah, Kathleen Wynne has a lovely smile. Why does he keep saying that?
What the hell was that? And she's trying to pull her hand away. But no pussy grabbing or bragging of pussy grabbing. So we can thank him for that. But anyway, I just find Canadians get very smug sometimes and want to feel superior to Americans. And it's kind of bullshit. But I'm interested in hearing what Mike's story of the week is.
Me too.
Mine's not even that interesting, but it's something I feel strongly about, but you guys might not. So this, and it has nothing to do with politics. I'm going off politics on this one. I want to talk about Joey Votto. And so for those of you that don't know, Joey Votto is one of the best baseball players in baseball right now. He's from Etobicoke. And yesterday he was doing an interview. He was on a podcast, not this one. We can't get Votto just yet, but he was on a podcast in America where they asked him about. So last week, a Canadian, James Paxton, pitched a no-hitter against the Blue Jays. It was a big thing, and all people's maple dicks all got up in the air because he's Canadian and he was in Canada. And in Joey Votto's interview, his response was, I don't care about that. I don't care about Canadian baseball. I don't care about the Blue Jays and James Paxton and the fact that that happened on Canadian soil. That's what he said. I'm paraphrasing, but that's basically what he said. And I want to defend him because people today are all up in arms about, like, how dare Joey Votto, you know, not fly the flag of Canada. And I got to say, look, Joey Votto is an American baseball player. He's a Canadian baseball player playing an American sport, and he's played in Cincinnati for his whole career. And if Joey Votto doesn't care about Canadian baseball, who gives a shit? Like, really, people in baseball, like, they always think that every Canadian player needs to come play for the Blue Jays. Why? It's a business. They're going to play where they play. Leave Votto alone. And I'd love him to be on the Jays, but there's no reason the Jays would sign him any more than any other team, except for the fact that he's awesome. And I would sign him because he is awesome. That's it. And
wow.
he had a fight with a plastic bag once on the field, which you guys need to look up. He just fights a plastic bag. Like, he's an interesting dude, and he doesn't care about Canadian baseball, and neither do I. But I love the sport.
Well, but in fairness, though, he also said in the but I'm actually with you in defending him. I saw that piece today. I'm not a baseball fan, but I did see that piece about his apology, because now he's, I think Warren Kinsella said, now this is a shit eating apology, because he's like going overboard on apologizing. But one of the things that he did say is that he, you know, in context, what he said about not caring about Canada and Canadian baseball. He also says, you know, he couldn't get onto Team Canada. He couldn't get onto the Blue Jays. So why the hell else, you know, why would he be expected to applaud all that Canada did for him? Now, granted, it did do a lot in terms of the services and stuff like that provided. But if you're looking at a career, didn't help him. So why should he be there blowing smoke up our ass when he had to go down south like so many do to make a name for themselves?
Yeah. Why should we care?
This People ties care into so mine, much. Right? We're so thin-skinned as Canadians, right? We need so much validation. We are so thin-skinned.
Yeah.
Well, people right? care about Canadian players. Like, I remember when Brett Laurie came to the Blue Jays, everyone was like, he was like Canadian Jesus, right? Like, everyone thought he was the savior. He sucked because no one cares if you're Canadian. Who cares? Let's just get the best players. Get everyone Dominican on our team. That's what I want. They're great.
Right. Perfect. Well, my story is...
And they're hot.
All right. Well, there you go. My story is very boring. Of course, it goes back to the Trump family. I just wanted to give a shout out to the First Lady of the United States, Melania Trump, who underwent an immobilization procedure to treat a benign kidney condition this week. She is actually the first U.S. First Lady to undergo such a serious medical procedure while in the White House since Nancy Reagan had a mastectomy in October 1997. Rosalind Carter underwent surgery to remove a benign lump from her breast in April 1977. And weeks after Betty Ford became First Lady, she was diagnosed with breast cancer and underwent a mastectomy in September 1974. So I feel very bad for Mrs. Trump, but my point wasn't about Mrs. Trump's surgery. It was that her asshole husband tweeted sweet tweet nothing about not only Mother's Day towards his wife, spent the day golfing, wasn't it Walter Reed visiting with her, holding her hand while she underwent what was a very important medical procedure? No, he was sitting there inhaling buckets of chicken and Carl's Jr.'s in his bedroom in the White House watching Fox News and screaming at the TV. I don't understand this man. I just don't.
Apparently he did go to visit her today, like the pressure. Can you imagine those visits? You know, she doesn't give a shit where she's probably wishing that what she got removed was him. Right? She'd like to have him surgically removed from her side. Never have to see his little pinky poking at her again.
Yeah.
But it's obviously he's been told you got to go. It looks bad. Can you imagine those visits? She's probably like, oh Christ, not you. Go away.
Yeah.
Anyway.
She immediately, the heart rate drops and it flatlines as soon as he comes in the room. Lord, take me now. Take me now.
Yeah.
One thing before we go, folks, I want to play a clip that was from, and I want to go back really quickly to this piece about the evangelicals and Donald Trump and how the evangelicals seem to look at this administration with so much hope. And it's from The West Wing. And it's during the final season when Alan Alda was playing the Republican nominee and people were asking him why it was that he wasn't embracing this hard right pastor who would help him secure the Republican nomination. And I think it's illustrative. And I've always loved this quote because I think when politicians, and it happens up here, pander to the good folks in the evangelical movement, they do themselves a disservice in politics writ large. Mike, I know you got to go. So we'll say ciao to you.
Take care, everyone. See you next week.
Thanks for a great show.
Thanks. Bye. See you next week.
But we're going to play this clip, and then that's how we're going to end the show today, because I think it speaks volumes to where we should be at. But if the evangelical vote wants to vote for Donald Trump and embrace them, that's their prerogative. For everybody else, here's Republican Senator from the West Wing by Aaron Sorkin, Arnold Vinnick.
Senator, are you going to reconsider Reverend Butler's invitation to his church this weekend?
I fully respect Reverend Butler's position. I mean, I appreciate his invitation. And, look, I respect Reverend Butler. And I respect his church too much to use it for my own political purposes. And that's exactly what I'd be doing if I went down there this Sunday. Because the truth is, it would just be an act of political phoniness. I may be wrong, but I suspect our churches already have enough political phonies in them.
Senator, do you or do you not?
I don't see how we can have a separation of church and state in this government. If you have to pass a religious test to get in this government. And I want to warn everyone in the press and all the voters out there. If you demand expressions of religious faith from politicians, you are just begging to be lied to. They won't all lie to you, but a lot of them will. and it'll be the easiest lie they ever had to tell to get your votes. So every day until the end of this campaign, I'll answer any question anyone has on government. But if you have a question on religion, please go to church. Thank you.
Senator? Senator Finnick? Senator?